Columbia Morning on News Talk 1400 KFRU. Mayor Brian Treese is our guest, and there's a city council meeting tonight. The city council main meeting will get underway at 7 o'clock after the pre-council meeting. Mayor, good to see you. Thank you.
David, good morning.
What do you got on the agenda in the pre-council meeting? Anything exciting? I didn't take a look at that this time.
Actually, it's been canceled.
So no pre-council?
No pre-council. So we'll go right in at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Well, then you get to a shorter night.
Well, it's, you know, I do enjoy a little break in between the pre-council and the work session and city council, because it gives me a chance to go talk to people in the audience that, you know, why are you here? What are you interested in? And while we don't talk about specific items on the agenda, it does kind of help, you know, connect my constituents with their government and what we're working on and how soon we think we're going to get to it, and thank you for coming, and I'm sorry you have to stay so late, and those types of things.
I'm going to get to a couple of things that I think are in the report section of the agenda, but let's talk first about something that is in the public hearing section of the agenda. First of all, the installation of active warning devices at the Colt intersection, Mount Zion Road in Hallsville. Somebody might say, why is the Columbia City Council in charge of something like that in Hallsville?
Because it's our tracks and our train. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's an important liability issue. I mean, to make sure that we have safe crossings, and that's actually a state statute that the carrier, the railroad, in this case, the City of Columbia, has to make sure that those that liability is protected.
I thought that was going to be the answer, so that should be a quick one. I don't know, why is that a public hearing rather than a consent? You can help me understand why things
probably
get consent.
Because it involves the expenditure of resources, and we need to approve an appropriation for it.
Okay. Now, let's go on to the other one that you had approved appropriations for, and it's something that we talked about 2 weeks ago. But now it is for the public hearing portion, rather than 2 weeks ago when it was just like first read, and that is when you just bring it up and say, we're going to talk about this in a future meeting. So tonight you will be talking about Phase 1 Sports Field House at the Phillips Park, and that is the one that would allow for four basketball courts and volleyball courts and office space and restrooms and things like that, with the opportunity also of expanding that later on. Over the weekend, the Tribune ran the article saying that Fred Perry, who is the Southern District Commissioner for Boone County, sent a letter to council members saying, let's not make that decision as a city tonight. Let's postpone that. I believe somewhere in the article it said something about 90 days so that you can review viability of a local sports park. What is your reaction to that?
Well, we've already delayed this project by at least 90 days, if not more than that. And I appreciate the great work that Commissioner Perry has done, you know, on his side, negotiating this not only with his commissioners, but with the private sector to try to develop a plan for the fairgrounds. But as mayor of the City of Columbia, my first priority is to the citizens of Columbia. And in this case, we have a very deliberate public improvement process. In Parks and Recreation, and Director Mike Griggs, did a great job of laying out that vision. He had interested parties meeting. He had a council presentation. He had a ballot issue that went to voters asking them to approve a plan to develop a four-court basketball arena. Phillips Lake was selected in that process. And here we are as we're getting ready to release bids for the construction of that project, comes another opportunity. And I think council, you know, took a look at that, look at the details of that or the lack of the details of that. And in the end, you know, we have to make a decision whether to proceed at Phillips Lake Park or go for something more than what we represented to voters. And I have to go with what we represented to voters, and that's to proceed at Phillips Lake Park.
Let me ask you about the idea. What is your opinion? And this is. I hear what you have said as far as the basis for making the decision. Those who would say, but if we had 13 courts, if we had X more number of soccer fields or softball fields or baseball fields, we could become a huge tournament destination or summer kind of thought like that. How do you think Columbia, how does that factor into making a decision like this?
It does, and I think council probably supports that vision. But to me, we have to follow our process in the ordinance. And I'm happy to go down that road in developing the fairgrounds for that, using that process, because I do think there is sufficient activity and, you know, Misha sports and other regional and league competition That would do very well in Columbia. Look, we're centrally located. We have parents every weekend that are going to Kansas City and St. Louis and Springfield. We routinely compete with Springfield for Missouri State High School Athletic Association events. And if we had that type of destination, that type of sports venue here, I think it would do very well.
Do you think that there is a market? Is there enough activity like that, that when those already exist in some of the places like Kansas City and St. Louis and maybe Springfield, that there is demand for more?
Studies show that there is, but you also have to go with your kind of gut instinct and experience here. And there are stay-in-plays in Kansas City, right, where you have to check your high school athletic team or middle school team into a hotel in order to play on their fields. I noticed there's a mall in St. Louis County that is going under, and they're contemplating converting that into indoor sports courts, which is an interesting concept because you could have all the parking there, you have all the infrastructure there. So I know other people are pursuing that. I don't see that pipeline of student athletes going down anytime in the future. In fact, if anything, we want to encourage that type of activity. I don't know that we have enough information now to justify delaying further action on a voter-approved tax increase or voter-approved tax extension to not to proceed at Phillips Lake.
Brian Trace is our guest. If you want to join us, you can talk to the mayor by calling 442-8255. So proceeding ahead, you don't see anything that would delay that decision tonight. I mean, you don't speak for the other six council members, but it seems to me like this that we're ready to move ahead with that.
I haven't received any new information the last, certainly in the last 2 weeks, if not when we had a work session with the county commission on this issue back first of the year in January. And we gave the city manager an additional, I forget what it was, 60 or 90 days to further develop that package, and that hasn't happened.
So did you say a couple of weeks ago that would not preclude future conversations about something up at the old fairgrounds or Central Missouri Event Center?
No, in fact, I think the council was enthusiastic about that vision. We have a joint asset up there already with the Atkins Fields that is co-owned by the county and the city, managed by the city Parks and Rec Department. They do an excellent job scheduling that. One of the challenges with this iteration of that co-owned asset is the introduction of a third not-for-profit. And so now all of a sudden you have a county owning half the land, you have the city managing that, and the city putting in almost all of the money. The county doesn't have any money at risk. In fact, it's shedding 50% of the liability. And then you introduce a third party that is putting up significant capital. What are their expectations with respect to scheduling? When do they need to use that facility? All of those challenges that go into it. And there's a lot of moving parts to that deal that we just don't have sufficient detail on yet.
So do you think it moving forward in the future, if that were to happen, let me just put out a scenario here and you tell me whether this is maybe one of the ways to do it. Would the Parks and Recreation Department then, as it looks forward to the next vote on whether to extend the sales tax for the projects like at Phillips, which was part of the conversation before we voted the last time for that extension of that tax, would they maybe come back for the next one and say, if you pass this tax, here is where some of this money would go?
They could, except Parks and Rec does a very good job. This is a very ground-up organization. They take public input seriously. They go out and have interested parties meetings and do needs assessments and meet with different groups. And we have those types of relationships. Cosmo Park, we have a great partner in the Cosmopolitan Club. Look at the farmers market where we do have a not-for-profit that is building and managing and fundraising part of that. But we're also not using that. Parks and Rec doesn't schedule that for its own, farmers market events, right? This is a little bit different. It has substantial capital investment involved with it. And look, thinking down the road 20 years from now, when that facility needs major upgrades, is that not-for-profit that is now just a few months old, is it still going to be around to make that investment? Will the county have resources to put into a new roof or a new HVAC system or to refurbish the courts? all of those issues. And then if we want to further build out the fairgrounds with soccer fields and more baseball fields and other amenities, I mean, what is the fundraising plan to do that? And are we just going to continue to go back to taxpayers for each one of those iterations? I think it needs a longer, more thoughtful conversation than what we've had so far.
But they could do that. I mean, the Parks and Rec could say, here's how we could manage with X funding to accomplish this independent of a private non-for-profit group and maybe making a purchase or accepting a gift from the county.
Correct. But, you know, ideally that facility and that development is something that if there is, you know, as those economic impact studies indicate, there is sufficient interest for that. How do we develop enough revenue from that to help pay for itself?
Because it would be, at least the Tribune mentioned, $30 to $40 million is a possibility for that.
As the total build out.
Yeah.
Right.
Caller, thank you for your patience. You're on with Mayor Trice.
Yes, Mayor. Last August.
Trice, excuse me. Why did I say that, Trice?
All right. I excuse you.
Thank you. I hope he does.
Mayor, last August, the Boone County Commission approached the city about putting in, I think, $50,000 for a study of Grace Lane, and they were putting in $50,000. I came to your council meeting and talked about it and what the terrible problems were out here with the traffic with Rolling Hills Road that the city put in. Why, I don't know, because it empties right into Grace Lane. And you got everything from Old Hawthorne plus two or three subdivisions being built now. Your council agreed that night to put on the money. The study was supposed to start in August and end by February. Here it is, the middle of March, and I finally got to find out from the Public Works Department in Boone County they're not handling that study that the city was. So then I called the city's Public Works and went to two or three different people before I finally got somebody who in turn called the company down in St. Louis that was doing the study. He called back and said it would be sometime in April, and I'm thinking to myself, every night or every day that I back out of my driveway, I'm putting my life on the line like five or six other neighbors are out here. And the traffic study that was done this summer by the Sheriff's Department just on the northbound lane, it was averaging almost 400 to 500 vehicles a day. And I don't know what the account was on the southbound lane because they didn't study that side. But I'm assuming it was pretty close to that. So in the meantime, here we sit with this every day because of all this traffic. And don't seem anybody have an answer of what's going to happen. And we all just sit here like sitting ducks. And I was wondering if you had any further information or if you could push the study along to do something about the traffic since the traffic was created by the city by putting in Rolling Hills Road.
Well, thanks for the call.
I appreciate that, and I will inquire as to the status of that study because I remember your testimony that night, and you waited until the end of the meeting, as I recall, and we've spoken a couple times on the radio and afterwards. So let me check to see where we are on that study, what the reason for the delay is, and to make sure that we get a copy of the current status of that, and I'll reach back out to you.
Mayor Brian Trice is our guest. You can call it 442-8255. A couple of other things, and we'll move on to other matters tonight on the City Council agenda. The resolution for an integrated electric resource and master plan task force. What's your best hope for that?
Well, ideally, we want a group of independent, thoughtful constituents that have the ability to take a look at Columbia's utility, especially electric needs, moving into the future, and create a reasonable plan as to what our load is going to be, what our demand is going to be, how do we pay for that. You know, if Columbia is going to continue growing and be one of the fastest growing cities in the Midwest, we need to make sure that we have the appropriate infrastructure investments to do that. Part of that is electrical planning. The problem is, and look, we're all familiar with Option A and all of the challenges associated with locating those power lines. Now, as it turns out, the assumptions that were used to develop that plan did not materialize. We're not using as much electricity as the department forecasted. And so to be able to look at those, also to look at new technology like battery storage, solar, residential solar, commercial solar, to really look at a way that we can make the best investment with the best information that we have at the right time. Also important for me is that we look at the rates that people pay for their electrical and you'll see also tonight water usage to make sure that those are equitable across all classifications, meaning that residential homeowners aren't paying more than their fair share than institutional or commercial entities, and to make sure that all of us who benefit from that system are paying proportionately and equitably.
The motivation for this is because of the conversation about the route of the high power, or is it a reaction to maybe not fully? I don't know how you can always accurately predict what you would need in the future. I think that there are surprises that would come along the way.
Obviously, there are,
yeah.
And you know, in this case, part of that atrophy is attributable to more energy efficient appliances. People's encouragement to conserve energy, you know, must have been taken to heart because people are using less energy. But I think there are some other, you know, this is typically the foundation for those types of plans. My sense is it happens every 10 years or so, and it's not because of option A, but it's more a product of the defeat of option A, if that makes sense, that we need to start over to really look at where is Columbia growing? What is our demand going to be in the future? How do we meet that? And, what do we need in terms of additional capacity?
Let's jump to the end of the meeting where it's report time. And you had asked, it says mid-December, so just 3 months ago, you had asked for a report as it shows up at the end of the meeting. Let me get to this. The report on crime reduction strategy report. Mm-hmm. And this comes from your request. I'm going to guess you've looked at this report. You'll react to it tonight at the meeting, but maybe you can give us a preview of your reaction to this report.
Well, it's not exactly what I had in mind. And keep in mind, when I did make this request, it was right after the last homicide in 2017 at Old Hawthorne. And at that point, we had one of the highest homicide fatalities on record in that year for the last, 17 years. And I wanted to make sure that we have, that we're on top of this problem. And I had anticipated a 6-month strategy, not taking 6 months to develop the strategy that we're moving forward in the future. I wanted to make sure that we had sufficient detectives, enough overtime, enough patrol and leadership in the department to really get on top of these homicides. And, I think this is a good synopsis of everything we are doing, as well as what our capacity is in the future. And, knock on wood, we've had an okay 2018 so far, notwithstanding New Year's Day, New Year's Eve. And, I just need to make sure that public safety is our number one priority, that it continues to remain the number one focus of the city council and our budget. I think it is. And to make sure that our department and our officers have the resources they need to do their jobs effectively.
So is this part of what will be used then in the ongoing decisions about community policing? Because were you referring to the 6 months that has been given to come up with a plan on community policing by the end of August?
We do have that. I think that's simultaneous to this. I think this is a little, both premature, but also a little too late in terms of what we need to be doing right now. I think that community policing plan is going to use some of this data, obviously. And if you look at some of the potential solutions, none of them would have prevented the crimes or the homicides that occurred. And I want to make sure that we have, when bad things do happen, that we have the resources in place to respond quickly, to stay on task, and bring justice to those victims and their families.
At the end of a report like this is, what can the city do and what additional help do we need? Those are some interesting suggestions that I mm-hmm. think would spur and generate much comment from many in this community if it ever got to the point where we were thinking about introducing any of these. One would be a shot spotter technology, which I've read about in other communities. Basically what it does is it tells you where gunshots are occurring so that you know where those are happening. And another one, institute a curfew for children. Another one, expand video capabilities in public spaces. In other words, like what some cities have done under mayor or city manager instructions, that have put up a whole lot more security cameras, mobile surveillance systems in high crime areas, Fusion Center with a total of 3 crime analysts for real-time crime information to be pushed out to the police department staff and assist in allocation of resources. An alarm ordinance that would result in the reduction of false alarms. Support and encourage the use of increased online reporting and mandatory online reporting, and increase the number of positions in the police department. So that's quite a list of discussion topics.
It is, and not surprisingly, some of those are going to be non-starters in this community, rightfully so. What I don't see on that list is you know, a collaborative policing strategy with the Boone County Sheriff's Department and MUPD. MUPD has 40 post-certified police officers that could be responding to areas on campus, fraternities, sororities, student apartments where there's high-density students, and they can enforce the student handbook. They can work within their own system instead of putting those kids into our municipal and circuit court system. In the meantime, that would also liberate several of our police officers to respond to crimes outside that downtown area. You know, there are other issues here that or other opportunities, I think, that we need to incorporate to make sure that we have a robust police department that's not spread too thin.
Does it ever come up when you cross paths with other mayors and you get to talking about community safety and a feeling of comfort there in crime numbers? Do other mayors ever hear about Columbia and say, "My gosh, what are you worried about? Well, you've got a situation that's pretty good when it comes to crime and statistics like that." Does that ever come up?
Well, I think it's all relative. I think it depends on, look, and again, public safety has to be our number one priority. It has to be reflected as a priority in our budget and in our governing and in how we treat those men and women that are on the front lines protecting us every day. That's one thing that we cannot do for ourselves that we expect government to do. Streets is number two, right? Mm. And so I want to make sure that we're maintaining that focus to make sure that we have the resources dedicated to this effort. I think this report is part of that. Obviously, it doesn't go far enough, and ultimately it comes down to additional resources.
Anything else on your mind today, up to the meeting tonight?
No, I think this is going to be I don't know. I hate to handicap these meetings
anymore.
Oh,
go ahead.
You know, that one of the things that makes Columbia great is that we have a lot of experts and a lot of input in our decision making, and Monday night is the time to come out and contribute that.
So what were you going to say about this meeting? Were you going to handicap the length of it and
hopefully it'll be a
complexity of it.
Shorter meeting. I know we've got need to spend some time on the fairgrounds and that crime strategy and in the electric resource group.
So those are the biggies?
I think so, yeah.
Good. Got lucky today, huh?
Yeah.
Mayor, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Always appreciate your being here. Mayor Brian Treese, our guest. This is KFRU.